Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Friday, April 19th. I'm Kobe Vance, in for Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, a newly released report shows racial and ethnic health disparities are persistent across the U.S., especially in the Deep South. Mississippi tree farmers who lost forest land during last year's extreme drought are now eligible to receive federal assistance for their losses. Plus, tomorrow is National Record Store Day. Audiophiles and vinyl collectors will be searching for that one-of-a-kind item. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. There are deep-seated racial and ethnic disparities in people's health and in health care across the Deep South. That's according to a new annual report from the Commonwealth Fund, a foundation that's focused on improving the healthcare system. These disparities are especially stark for Black people and other people of color. The COVID-19 pandemic only made things worse, and many people are dying younger than they should because of health problems or because of inadequate medical care, especially in the Gulf South. Healthcare systems in certain states, including Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Mississippi, perform poorly for all ages. The Gulf States Newsroom's Drew Hawkins talks with Joseph Betancourt, the president of the Commonwealth Fund, about the research and the findings of the report.
But fundamentally, what we're trying to do with this report is look at this issue state by state. We've looked at 25 different measures that span across health outcomes, health access, healthcare quality, and looked at performance in those states among several different racial ethnic minorities, Blacks, whites, Hispanics, American Indian, Alaskan Natives, Asian Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians, and attempted to determine how these groups perform compared to their white counterparts.
And when you're looking across the country nationally, what are some of the major trends that this report found?
You know, the research on racial ethnic spreads in health and healthcare tells us a couple of things. First, we know that the social drivers, the communities in which people live, things like housing insecurity, food insecurity, access to places to exercise that are safe, are one of the single largest contributors to racial ethnic disparities in health and healthcare. We also understand that minorities are more likely to be uninsured than their white counterparts. And we also understand that minorities are more likely to receive lower quality care than their white counterparts in the healthcare system. So with all that context, what we see in this report is states that, number one, have policies that address some of the social drivers more directly. Number two, that do more to increase healthcare coverage for their population. And number three, states that I would argue their health systems are more focused on health equity tend to do on average better than those that don't.
You know, I cover the Gulf South states. I cover Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Are there any specific findings in terms of this region that you would want to highlight that were this report illuminated?
Certainly, I think the Gulf states, states that we've looked at here, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, in our average state scorecards that we do, tend to do less well around health outcomes just more generally. So as we look at our state scorecard that we publish every year, fundamentally, we do see those states as having lower performance around some key healthcare measures. I'd say that we, not surprisingly, don't see much difference here as it relates to health equity and health disparities. We do see greater disparities in the Gulf states when compared to some other states with poorer performance for communities of color.
One of the things that jumped out at me as it relates to this region was this metric of health system performance. Can you talk a little bit about what that means, what goes into that term?
Certainly, we have a variety of different measures that look at health system performance. Fundamentally, we're looking at, are you providing the necessary evidence-based bundle of care for different conditions? And we have a variety of different metrics to assess that. And what we found is that, yes, across the country, disparities exist no matter what state you're in. There are some states that have better performance for communities of color than others. But I think that health system performance is really, really critical. That's really where we're bringing science and evidence-based care to manage chronic conditions that are at the root of the health disparities in the first place. So that health system's performance really becomes an anchor above and beyond coverage and health outcomes for us to think about ways we can improve health care for diverse communities.
One of the, you know, in the discussion section of this paper, there's discussions about policies that could maybe either mitigate, maybe help change the direction of these things. Can you talk a little bit about, in the broader sense, what that discussion section, what stands out as maybe some real potential policy changes that could improve these disparities?
Absolutely. You know, I think a big lesson here is state health policy matters. And when we're thinking about affordable, comprehensive care, that begins with coverage. And so when we think about a key policy recommendation, the more states can do to assure that their population has healthcare coverage, I think the better we're going to see their capacity to address these healthcare disparities. We see that among some of the states that actually perform a little bit better, those who've expanded Medicaid, those who've done more to make care more affordable from the policy side. So I think that's very, very important. It really does begin with coverage. I'd say second, you know, it doesn't end with coverage, although it begins with coverage. And we want to make sure that people have affordable, accessible, high quality, and what I would argue culturally competent primary care. Really, that is the anchor and portal into the healthcare system. And so being able to have a strong primary care base of providers who, quite frankly, reflect the community, are able to care for individuals of different backgrounds at a high level, I think is really critical. And so work that does support the primary care practice is absolutely critical. And I think there's a lot that states could do in that regard. Certainly, I think, as I mentioned, the social drivers play a big role. And so really thinking about addressing issues such as housing insecurity, food insecurity, the built environment, so that people can be healthy and really mitigate the disproportionate impact that those negative social drivers have on communities of color. I think policies in that space will make a big difference here in leveling the playing field.
As you've said, and as the report kind of reiterates, these disparities have long been the norm. I mean, I'm curious, were you surprised? Were you guys surprised at what the report ultimately kind of found?
Certainly, this report, you know, in no way discovered disparities. They've been longstanding. I think what we were trying to really look at is there variation by state? And are there certain things about certain states that we could look at that might be lessons? I think a couple of things stand out. Number one, all 50 states, we still see disparities. So no one's got it right, even among those who are high performing more generally. And so no one's immune from these health disparities. I'd say number two, yes, there are a set of things that we could begin to glean from states that perform better around health equity than others. And I think that's a real addition here to this conversation. And ultimately, our goal is that we could learn from those states to do well and think about ways in which we could scale those learnings across the nation to ultimately address these health disparities.
With this report, with so much richness and depth to it, what's the bottom line here? What's a key takeaway you would give to someone if you had one sentence to tell them?
My key takeaway here is disparities persist, and there are actionable strategies we need to deploy, you know, as soon as possible to begin to address them. We could learn from what we've seen here, and that action is necessary and long overdue.
The Commonwealth Fund provides support for the Gulf States Newsroom's health equity coverage. Coming up, Mississippi tree farmers who lost forest land during last year's extreme drought are now eligible to receive federal assistance for their losses. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Robin Young. We'll check in on the Trump trial, moves in Congress to approve aid for Israel and Ukraine. And with Earth Day Monday, we'll look at a new collection of essays that considers the intersection of motherhood, climate activism, and racial justice. Next time, here and now.
Today at noon on MPB Think Radio.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Family Fun Day will be in the Pohl Gymnasium on the campus of Mississippi University for Women in Columbus on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. MPB has partnered with the Mississippi School for Mathematics and Science, MUW, and the Preservation Society of Columbus to host the free event. Come and meet MPB's own Ed Said. The whole family can enjoy music, a health fair, games and activities related to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Register at education.mpbonline.org.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kobe Vance. Tree farmers and forest landowners in all 82 Mississippi counties are eligible to receive federal assistance for their losses to forest land due to last year's extreme drought. The U.S. Department of Agriculture approved the state for the Emergency Forest Restoration Program. More than 12.5 million trees died in Mississippi's forests last year as a result of the severe drought, and more trees are expected. MPB's Mike McEwen speaks with Cade Clowers with the Mississippi Forestry Commission about how the emergency recovery funds will help tree farmers.
The way they have this set up is a landowner can get up to $500,000, per landowner, and it covers up to 75% of the cost to reestablish their timberland with a $1,000 minimum, to get it back in. And this is designed for forest landowners. This doesn't cover residential trees.
From what I'm reading, this is for non-industrial private forest lands. So who owns non-industrial private forest lands, and what do they exist for?
It could be family land, corporations, things like that. It's just not industry, just not your big timber corporations that large-scale commercially grow timber. So this could be your grandparents' 20 acres or 40 acres that's been in the family for years or larger, or it could be inherited land that's just that people have kept in their family for years. Most of the land in Mississippi is owned by non-industrial private forest landowners. Industry only owns a small portion of it.
So you were saying earlier that, the EFRP, typically it's more of a one-off event like a tornado or a hurricane or, I guess, a really bad wildland fire. With the USDA taking this new approach, does that kind of speak to just how bad the drought was for forest lands in the state?
Yes, definitely. And we're glad that they're getting some help out there, because we're getting bombarded with questions about what am I going to do? What do I need to do? Can we get some help? Is there financial assistance out there? We're getting lots and lots of questions, and we're glad that they opened this up for us to point direct landowners to get the assistance they need to get their land back in production.
You've probably never seen anything like this before then, I would imagine, or have you?
No, I haven't. I'm 42 years old, and I've never seen anything like this in Mississippi. And as far as I know, this is EFRP has never been used for drought in Mississippi. So this is a whole new set of challenges that we're facing.
Has there been anything that, either in your work or just at the Forestry Commission in general, that y'all have learned since that drought kind of wrapped up might change your approach going forward?
Yes, we're not exactly certain what all is going to come of this, but what was noticed is certain genetically modified trees seem to be more resistant to some of this disease and insect damage than some of the traditional seedlings did. That's something, and they're studying it now, so I can't really disclose all the details of it, but just generally speaking, that's something that's being looked into going forward, to try to, come up with a better seedling that'll be more resistant to some of these diseases and insect damage.
At the risk of overgeneralizing, what's the state of forests in Mississippi today? Where are they at in terms of rebounding from that drought and also dealing with this ipsbeetle swarm?
We're on the beginning of a long journey, I guess would be the easiest way to say that. we're going to continue to see mortality. I think it'll be delayed more in the oaks. I know that we're seeing some, but I still think there's going to be some mortality there. But even pines are still dying every day here in Mississippi. So I'm not sure long term. I know this EFRP will be for 3 years and possibly be extended for two more. But we're just getting into this large tidal wave of mortality.
Are you expecting, you know, tree mortality on a large scale to continue in the state?
I do believe that it will. I do think that we're going to continue to see that, especially in the oaks. I mean, I don't say large scale in the oaks, just what I've seen in the parts of the state that I've traveled, it seems like the hardwoods are green, but they delay sometimes. You know, they may not show effects for several years from some kind of, you know, situation like this.
And so with that in mind, you know, we're heading into what is typically dry season in the state. It's not usually as dry or as warm as it was last year. But if there were another drought or just drier conditions, what would that mean for the state of forests as they are today?
If it goes back into that drought situation, it's just going to be that much more devastating to our pine forest. Because looking at the maps and the data that we have now on how much acreage was impacted and how it did, if that happens again, I suspect that pine beetle, yips, you know, all the bark beetles, all those different things will ramp back up. Disease will show back up. There's just it's like a domino effect. Like the drought stresses a tree out, then all these other things attack, stress trees out, and then they die, and then you got a problem. So if we go into another drought, it'll be just the same, more of the same, what we're seeing right now.
Officials estimate Mississippi suffered nearly $100 million in economic losses due to the drought. That was Cade Clowers with the Mississippi Forest Commission. Coming up, tomorrow is National Record Store Day. Audiophiles and vinyl collectors will be searching for that one-of-a-kind item. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
What's happening at the Mississippi Legislature? Tune in each week to At Issue on MPB Think Radio. I'm Michael Guidry. Join us as we take an inside look at the legislative session and get perspectives from both sides of the aisle. At Issue airs on MPB Think Radio every Friday night at 6:30 through the end of the session. And subscribe to the At Issue podcast so you can listen anytime, anywhere. MPB's At Issue. Tune in, Mississippi.
AutoCorrect on MPB Think Radio, helping you correct your auto problems. Our host is Coach Charlie Milton, ASC Certified Master Technician.
Let me help save you some money working on your cars. Listen to our podcast, AutoCorrect.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kobe Vance. Tomorrow is National Record Store Day, and small business owners are asking folks to come out and look for exclusive records, listen to music, and interact with local artists. Among the dozens of record shops celebrating throughout Mississippi is Offbeat Records in Jackson. Owner Philip Rollins says his store will host a day full of events, including an appearance from Grammy Award-winning artist, blues artist Bobby Rush.
It's a celebration for record stores, independent record stores specifically. So as independent record stores, we get special releases that are limited or only available at independent record stores like Offbeat, which is a store I own. So we have people that come to celebrate. DJs come and play vinyl. We'll have Bobby Rush come through. He's got a release that day with the Blind Boys of Alabama. He'll be doing signings for that. And people sometimes line up as early as 5 or 4 o'clock in the morning to get that special release.
One of the biggest draws of Record Store Day is definitely some of these exclusives. What are some of the things that people are going to be looking out for when they, or should they be looking out for when they go to a record store?
Well, there's a reissue for the Murder Was the Case soundtrack by Snoop Dogg and Death Row. There's a live De La Soul album, a 10-year anniversary for Freddie Gibbs and Madlib's Pinata. There's also a Noah Kahan release, a Paramore remix release, and there's a lot more. It's of Wilco, Cheech and Chong, of course, because it's 420. There's a Talking Heads. There's a David Byrne singing Hard Times. And the B-side is Paramore singing Burning Down the House. So those are things I would definitely look out for. Yeah, it goes from like everything from rock to reggae to ska to punk. It's all over the place.
A lot of people who listen to records pretty often are probably very familiar with the idea of vinyl having a resurgence back in the past few years. You know, what's it been like on your end to be able to see that and to be able to participate in Record Store Day?
Vinyl's been on the rise for a while now, and more and more people are getting into it because of the, I would say, the tangibility of being able to hold music and hold the album cover again. You don't get that with an MP3 or, you know, looking on your phone and whatever. And it's also a thing that can be generational as well, too. A lot of people are inheriting their parents' or grandparents' collections, and they're like, hey, I want to build up my collection even more and have my son or grandchildren to have when I, you know, pass or whatever. And, you know, it's also music that I see people from all ages, from men in their 60s to teenagers in their 13, 12 years old, and they're listening, you know, they're buying like old Earth, Wind & Fire records. And I'm like, what'd you know this from? Oh, my mom plays it. So it's very generational. It's very emotional. Music is a very emotional thing.
In a time where music can be taken off Spotify or Apple Music at any time, it's really nice to be able to have something physical, in my opinion, especially the artwork, being able to see it in a format that's a foot big,
yeah,
or 1 square foot.
Yeah, 12 say. Feet, 12 inches, not 12 feet, 12 inches.
Yeah, you get to really kind of see what the artist was going for there. Y'all are taking it, again, as you said before, a step further than just having the basic, you know, the exclusives. Y'all are having a full day of this to be able to make it an event. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the day is going to start pretty early. We don't officially open up until 8 o'clock per the Record Store Day rules, but we will have North Shore Coffee Truck there at 6 o'clock for people who are waiting in line. Like I said, I have people that, you know, come through at like 5 o'clock and start waiting to get that record because there are limited quantities. And then at 10 o'clock, we'll have Bobby Rush there. He'll be signing and chatting up with people and talking about the release he has with the Blind Boys of Alabama. We'll also have DJs coming throughout the day from DJ Daddy Bug, DJ Dad Chap, Stefan Urkel, DJ Scrap Dirty, and Spirituals. They'll all be doing vinyl sets throughout the day. And so it's going to be a pretty big day of a lot of, you know, just people hanging out, getting the records they want. There's going to be a sale on all our pre-loved records or used records, what most people call it. But and all of our music-related comic books and books as well, too.
What does it mean to you to see this day nationally be recognized and put an emphasis on going out to your local record shop to be able to just, you know, engage in the community, but also be able to support a local business?
It means a lot, especially in the way the economy is. A lot of people are used to clicking a button, going on Amazon, and purchasing something there. And when I was growing up, I went to Bebop and comic book shops. And that's where a lot of my community came from. That's what I think of when I think of community, is going to places that we're like-minded people. Even though we may have different tastes in music, we are all gathering around this one thing that is very similar. And it is very important that we support the local businesses like this, because these are the things that are going to be stapled into the community for generations to come. There's always going to be a Target and a Walmart or whatever, but you don't hang out at those places. You don't, you know, I mean, you run into friends, but you're buying something and getting out. You're not hanging out at the shop and going to a listening event there, or going to a midnight release there. You're not doing that there. You're going to your local business that supports that supports the community, that's putting money back into the local community as well, too.
And I also love being able to see things that I would have never really sought out myself, being able to, you know, get exposed to records that I may have never even known existed.
Exactly. And I mean, that's kind of the downside of, you know, the algorithm of Spotify and Apple Music. There's only so much they can recommend to you. But if you go to like a record store, you can get a vast amount of recommendations from your local record store owner. And even the patrons at the shop are just hanging out as well, too.
Any tips for getting the good exclusives?
If you're trying to get the good exclusives, you got to get up and get there early. I mean, get up as early as possible, wait in line, check with your record store, see if they have a line system or a callback system or whatever. Some stores are like letting people in, limited amount of people in. And some people are just like getting in line. But everybody is different. So just get up early, check and be prepared.
Philip Rollins is owner of Offbeats Records in Jackson. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.